with injured cats. To volunteer or for more information, you may contact them at 631-425-1884 or visit them on the web at www.lasthopeanimalrescue.com. Thank you.
Yeah, even on our recordings, we have squeaky chairs. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook Time once again for Off the Wall. It's another Tuesday evening. Welcome. It's Off the Wall time. Emmanuel Balsini with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm fine.
Yeah?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
Well, you kind of curled up in a ball in the corner there. It's something up. It's you got into a fight with the computer. I know that, but
well, I'm just stretching because we're always hard at work here at WUSB Stony Brook.
Sorry, 107.3 and 90.1.
Lost my voice.
I give the second frequency first.
Yeah, tell them all of it.
Yeah.
Please don't leave our audience uninformed.
No. Well, our audience informs us. That's how it works. And how do you inform us? You inform us by writing to us, otw@2600.com, or by calling us at 631-632-9872. 9872 spells WUSB on telephones that have letters.
And those letters are call letters or call signs.
Every radio station in the United States has one.
Everything on the East Coast starts with a W, and everything on the Best Coast starts with a K.
Okay, I know you said Best Coast there instead of West Coast. I'll let that go, but I cannot let go the misinformation you just tried to pass off as far as every radio station on the East beginning with W. How about KYW in Philadelphia, huh? How about KDKA in Pittsburgh? Yeah.
I didn't know about those.
Oh, yeah, that grandfathers.
Uh-huh.
Somehow.
Well, learn me some more about the grandfather talk.
WBAP in Dallas, okay? So explain that one, too. And also, you know, your three-letter call signs, those are grandfathers as well. So, yeah, a lot of elderly radio stations out there. Okay, but that's not the point. We have a lot of things to cover tonight, some good, some bad.
Let's spread the obsessive compulsions across
right.
stories
this is the bad
topics
is,
tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
But that is a reality. This is radio, and we're hard at work here. Always archiving and storing copies
not
of
always,
things.
Not always.
And
sometimes I forget to start.
If
them.
You are interested in any of our shows from shows past, you can check those out. www.2600.com/off the wall.
You know, this is as good a time as any to thank Jens, who is our genius as far as getting our shows online. And tonight he has extra work to do because, look, a CD is skipping at the very last couple of seconds. You'll probably hear the theme try to play a little. Yep, there it is. But I forgot to start our recorder, and so that means Jones has to go and get it from a different source and then merge it with when I finally do start recording. So hang on a second. I have just hit the record button now. So now you're probably hearing the recording that you should have heard from the beginning if I'd remembered to hit the right button, and I forgot. But the fact that you heard anything before this, that's all Jens. So thank you, Jens, for all the work you did, both on this show and the other show.
Isn't he incredible?
He is. He really is.
It takes a lot of people to produce community radio.
For some reason, it does.
We're happy to do it. No, and it's a varied and technical, but also logistical, and
I have to get someone to open the door for me.
So much wrangling. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't do that myself.
Well, and we value access control, and part of that is reading your letters and giving you access by taking your phone calls. But
you've got somebody open the car door for you. I don't know how you pulled that off. A uniformed guy that does that. It doesn't open my door. It just opens your door.
We don't talk about him.
Oh, no, I want to talk about him. Do you pay him or do we? Okay, we'll talk after the show.
It ruins the. Can we just?
No, I like the VIP treatment. It's especially on an empty campus. It's kind of cool, but one has to wonder sometimes about priorities.
I don't want the audience.
No.
About it.
What audience? Who cares? Nobody's listening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're back. Sorry about that. We had a little technical difficulty.
You know, we were complaining a week ago about how much we were in pain from walking on the beach for 8 miles. Well, we fixed that this week by doing the same thing again, except in a different way. We walked on the Greenbelt Trail. Yeah, the Greenbelt Trail is actually asphalt, and it's not really green, but it goes through the greenery. And it has to be asphalt because how else would you ride a bike? Well, unless you're riding a dirt bike, which people do. But that's not the point. The point is that this is an amazing trail that's, I think, celebrated its 10th anniversary at least the basic part of it did, because it keeps getting expanded. It starts in Setauket. You know where the evil Renaissance people are? Well, they're not all evil. Some of them are good, but there are certain evil people there that helped elect Trump. I guess, you know, we shouldn't talk about them, but that's the plant. The plant?
It's
not really a plant. It's a kind of a research
office
place.
Office park
where people think, really a think tank,
yeah,
maybe?
Whatever, it's not important. It starts in Setauket area.
What do
and
they
then...
do in that place? I just want to know what they do with hedge funds. I don't even know what a hedge fund is. It's got something to do with making money really fast.
Yeah, they're you know, the brainiacs and stuff, but that's not the important part. The important part is the trail itself, which goes through a lot of different communities sort of along the trains, but it ends up at Fort Jeff Station, actually.
Yeah.
Right around there. There's a bit of a park and ride situation.
Think about that. For you to get from Setauket by Renaissance and wind up in Port Jefferson Station, and where you wind up is, how do I describe this? It's that parking lot that nobody understands where Arby's used to be, across the street from Carvel and what used to be a KFC.
And 7-Eleven.
It's where 25A breaks away from 112. How about that? It's behind the bowling alley. I can't be any clearer.
Across from the gas station that's next to the nursery?
Oh, yeah, that narrows it down.
Uh-huh.
Well, okay, for you to get there by car, it takes forever. But if you it also takes forever if you walk, obviously. But it's about 3 miles, which isn't as far as if you drive. At least I don't think it is. Because you're cutting through all these neighborhoods, and I didn't realize how much greenery we had between these places. It was really kind of cool. It took a long time, and then we realized we did this on Sunday. I was thinking, you know, it would be cool to take the free shuttle they have that goes down to Port Jeff Village, and then hop on a bus and take that back to Renaissance and then get in our car there. But then I found out that Suffolk County, in its infinite wisdom, doesn't have buses on Sunday. It's like we're back in the 1950s, so that was not an option, so we walked back.
Yeah, you're supposed to go by horse and buggy on the weekends.
Yeah, we saw horse and buggy in Port Jefferson
very
day. Somebody was getting married, I think.
Yes, it was a straight crime.
Tying up traffic like you would not believe. But, okay, but the point is, the Greenbelt Trail is amazing. It's one of these things that was done years ago by our more environmentally minded elected officials, because that was proposed to be a highway, a bypass. Now imagine this. You're on Route 25A. Of course, people who are outside the region have no idea what we're talking about, but you can imagine. 25A by the evil Renaissance people, and you could cut through there and wind up in Port Jeff Station, bypassing Port Jefferson, bypassing East Setauket. I don't know why I would bypass East Setauket. There's like 14 people there. But you just wind up cutting through all this land. But instead you can walk your dog, you can walk yourself, you can bike ride, you can do whatever.
Yeah, you kept saying it, and I just could not, for the life of me, imagine more roadway and less accommodation for pedestrians and people on bicycles and animals of all sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Amongst the vegetation, and it's, you know, it's nice. It actually is cool because of you know, the wooded areas that you end up walking through, and you know, you're not as exposed as say walking next to a roadway or on the different byways and side streets and so on.
And you wind up in back of the former Lawrence Aviation site in Port Jefferson Station. Talk about evil people. Those people were evil. They were military contractors. They made all kinds of, what, airplane parts and things?
They made titanium sheeting.
But they also polluted the groundwater and did all kinds of nasty things to the environment.
Yeah.
Now, they had a big gate around their whole facility. I could never get past that gate. They always had somebody who was one step ahead of me. But now you can simply walk past it on this Greenbelt Trail. You see the abandoned buildings. It looks really kind of scary.
There's a lot of graffiti and unsavory types.
Yeah, unsavory types. What us?
Yeah, pretty much us, and I don't know. It seems like the fence is, you know, not doing a very good job. Let's put it that way. I hope teenagers aren't hanging out there, because there's a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah, there's rusty nails.
Yeah, and, like, open pits of awful chemicals.
So who has to pay for that? I mean, Lawrence Aviation doesn't exist anymore. Are they held liable? Are their executives held liable? Or is this something that the taxpayers are just stuck with? You know, it's pretty obvious they were up to something. You know, you have all these polluting corporations, and then when it's finally exposed that they are up to something, everyone throws their hands up and says, oh, well, now we have to clean it up, and it's going to take 20, 30 years.
Yeah, that's part of, I think, relinquishing the property and mitigating or you know, being able to relinquish themselves in a business sense. They have to follow the steps in the Superfund program to remediate it, and you know, so that they're as a cost of having done business in the way they were.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, crushing drums of chemicals and letting the chemicals spill off into the land, and now there's a toxic plume in the groundwater.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
That's what you get when you trust companies to do the right thing, and that's what I know a lot of people think is going to happen with a lot of the things that are changing in our current regime. Hopefully it won't stay that way too long, but you can bet things like this will happen as a result.
Yeah, especially when we just don't look critically at how people are operating in a business sense, and we just have sympathy for big business or small business or any business over the environment and the habitats that they're adjacent or occupying, and that's just in the long run not really good for humanity. It may be good for short-term profits or, you know, a quick lick by shareholders, but that isn't the kind of community we ought to be left with, you know, mm-hmm. places mm-hmm. that people and animals can't survive in.
Well, we don't want to focus just on the bad, because there is good, too. Look at this picture. Solar farm in Kings Park to power 1,000 homes. It's right, a 27-acre Kings Park property. Started as a landfill during the 1940s, you know, back when we were great. And then became a golf driving range in the 1980s. Well, now they're a home to a solar farm, and people are outraged. Well,
why?
Some people are outraged.
Why?
Do you know people are outraged? Somewhere people are outraged at this. I'm not. And
we were talking about this last week. This is the last year to get a 30% tax credit.
Which I still don't understand why that expires.
You should care.
Yeah, I do care. What do you mean? What are you looking at me for? I care.
I don't know. You have that look of apathy.
No, that's not
I
apathy.
See it.
That's
no, you blasé indifference. No, I see it. It's you're masking it, but I'm on to you.
No, it's actually a physical condition, but whatever. Okay. The official opening of the solar farm features 18,360 panels. You can come and count them. It came the same day the State Assembly passed a landmark climate bill calling for net zero carbon emissions by 2254. That's when, like, Babylon 5 is online. No, 2050. But, you know, it might as well be 2254. Why can't they do it faster than that? 2050? I mean, no, we're capable of more. I know we are.
Well, that's why the business case has to be made, so the industry itself accelerates it, because they understand that the going that route is beneficial. I think the estimates are, you know, purely incentive-based. So when we hear these, you know, timetables and stuff, that's under the circumstances we have now. I would imagine there's not, like, a glowing uptake that's calculated into those figures. So perhaps it could be accelerated if again, like, the business case or the social will is there.
The social has to be there. And, you know, a lot of people criticize Cuomo corruption or just, you know, basically being a jerk in certain ways or just sarcastic. I don't know. There's all kinds of things that you can criticize him for. But one thing he does do is get things done as far as building things that are needed, like the new Kosciuszko Bridge, East Side Access to the LIRR. All kinds of things like that. I just hope that he gets further motivated to just push through these things that people keep saying are impossible or have to wait, you know, until 2050 or whatever. It's, you know, we were walking on this trail. We passed high tension wires, the right of way. And I was just thinking, you know, wouldn't that be a great high-speed rail line right there? Because that takes cars off the road. It's basically assuming you get the electricity in a clean way. It's not polluting the environment, certainly not as much as all the cars that you're replacing. And even if it's not a high-speed rail, you could build something that connects this part of the island to Connecticut through a tunnel, and then you have all this mass transit connections that you don't have normally. Yeah, it's impossible, just like it's impossible to electrify out to Port Jefferson. But you know what? For the first time, they're talking about doing it. And they might actually do this. You know, this is how things work in other parts of the world. In China, even in Europe, they decide to build things and they get it done somehow instead of just talking about all the ways that it's impossible.
So, imagine another stop on the LIRR that would be a connecting platform to like a north-south electric or high-speed or light rail.
Well, it's impossible for another reason, Kyle, because they use overhead wires in Connecticut, but they use third rail on Long Island. So how do you, you know, people tell us this too. Yeah, you can't merge the two. They're both run by the MTA, for God's sake, but you can't use the same cars on different lines. These are problems we can figure out. We can fix these things, but we have to have the desire to do it. And that's what we seem to be lacking most of the time. So, you know, in Cuomo, I see somebody who actually has the will to do it and gets it done somehow.
Right. Well, we're led to believe that, I think, but it's not actually true, but it's often the impression we're left with.
Sure. Well, anyway, so they say the... on the solar energy, it's equivalent to removing thousands of metric tons of carbon dioxide from the air that would have been generated by fossil fuels. That's just the Kings Park solar farm. So that's one place. It's near here, and it's a positive development. We want to focus on the positive developments as well as the negative developments. Okay, here's a positive or a negative development. Lots of schools are named after Confederate generals or overall racists. Here's one. The Northeast Independent School District in Texas was facing pressure to change the name of Robert E. Lee High School amid national protests over the legacy of the Confederate general. Do you have any Robert E. Lee things here in Long Island? I'm curious. There might be.
Probably.
But officials were concerned about the estimated $1.3 million it would cost to remove and replace signs, redo a turf field. Why do you have to redo a turf field to rename... to get Robert E. Lee's name off of it? Is it just in the ground somehow? Order new uniforms? Okay, that I could see. All kinds of changes you have to make.
I don't know. I know a little bit about turf because we actually have turf for a conference that we do.
Yeah, we have fake turf. It doesn't have a Confederate general's name
right,
on it.
The reason we were able to get it is because it was used because the schools changed them, I think. Maybe they changed the color schemes or they wear out or something. I don't know, but it's in their interest.
Okay, I don't know how turf can be racist. I'm trying to figure it out.
Maybe the flags were printed because a lot of the turf has different colors and stuff. Maybe there was some kind of iconography or imagery or the name, you know, spelled out, Robert E. Lee, could be printed on the artificial.
All right, well, listen to what these smart people in Texas did. They decided to rebrand the school Legacy of Educational Excellence. Legacy of Educational Excellence, L-E-E. And they now use Lee High School as the nickname. And that move saved about $1 million because all they had to do was get rid of the Robert E. And that significantly cut down on costs. Many things could stay as they were. Yeah, you don't have to... you don't have to change the name. You just have to change who it's named for. For instance, Port Jefferson. You know, years ago, I was upset when they tore down the Thomas Jefferson statue because the greedy guy on the corner wanted to put up some war memorial instead tore down the statue of somebody who represented freedom. But now it's kind of fallen out of favor. People are saying, oh, Thomas Jefferson, slave owner, you know, even though – a lot of people were slave owners then, kind of looked at as a negative thing. So do you rename Port Jefferson now? Or maybe you name it after a different Jefferson? We've just got to find a good Jefferson.
Or Trump.
What do you mean, Trump?
Just Port Trump.
Really? That's your suggestion.
Well, I think a lot of people would be in favor of it.
Some people would be in favor of that. I hope nothing is named after him. Are there any Trump high schools? Well, we'll keep our eye on.
Not yet.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're in the works. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, well, I'm bitter. It's bittersweet. It seems like they're being cute down there in Texas.
They're being smart. That's the right thing to do. You don't have to basically uproot everything and spend all this money. You send a message by simply naming it after something else. That's more of a slap in the face than anything else, I think.
Right, right.
Especially if you name it after somebody that would be opposed to what that person, the original person, stood for.
Is that erasing history, though?
What if you named Port Jefferson after George Jefferson?
Huh? Okay. Yeah. Now
you
I
see?
Like that.
You see where I'm going
okay,
with this?
Okay, no, I see what you're
that
saying.
That would be
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
You have a big statue of, you know, of Sherman Helmsley, whatever his name was, as people get off the ferry.
Moving on up.
Yeah, moving on up. That could be the whole thing for Port Jeff Station. You know, that uptown funk thing they got going on where they're rebuilding?
Yeah.
Moving on up. Port Jeff Station, George Jefferson. Yo, come on.
Why are we not communications like consultants for this?
I don't know. Hey, the mayor won the election last week.
Did
we talked about this. That was good. I was happy about that because the opponent was a Trump surrogate. Literally, the Trump surrogate for Suffolk County was running for Port Jefferson. And just the race got so ugly with the accusations that he was hurling out about his signs being stolen, which were not happening because the signs were everywhere.
They were printing that on their signs.
Printing "Don't steal our signs," which takes lead time to do that. So that was part of the whole campaign. Anyway,
the victim campaign.
All of that was cast aside, not happening. So that's good. So maybe some positive things can come out as a result.
We'll indeed, see. Indeed.
All right. Well, we only have an hour.
Anything else on Long Island?
That's plenty of stuff, but we have other things to get to.
Okay.
Yeah, this is our new sound effect. It's a film projector, and I promise this will turn into something a little bit more developed. Right now, it's just a film projector. Let's turn it off, and we are basically using that to go into our discussion about the films that we have seen, which we have not been talking about recently because we've been busy talking about other things. So we're going to quickly go through.
Ow! Oh, ow!
You all right there?
That's hot.
Don't touch it. I didn't say to touch it.
I didn't realize the lamp. I was just looking at
you
it.
You saw me carrying this thing in here. It's heavy as hell. And no, right. It's not going to go on again.
No. Well, let's let it cool off. Let's talk about the film.
All right, quickly, because we have like 2.5 years to go through here. We've been seeing every Academy Award-winning film since the Academy Awards began in the late 20s. So last we left you, I think, was 1947. So we're going to tell you what we saw from 1948. Now, there are two films for every year because they started giving credit for foreign films, which was nice of them because, yeah, this is another part of the planet other than the United States. So 1948 was a French film called Monsieur Vincent or Vincent. Basically, it was a story about the 17th century priest and charity worker, showed his struggle to help the poor in the face of obstacles like, you know, the Black Death. Things like that.
Yeah, he touched people who were ill and was compassionate and went into this town that was just really, everybody was a shut-in because they were so scared of.
Walks into this town and he's getting hit by stones that are coming from somewhere. He can't see where they're coming from.
Yeah.
And all these people are locked in their little hovels. And they're hitting him with stones.
They just pelt him from above. It's awful.
And yet he stays there and tries to help these people. And, yeah, they're dealing with Black Death and all kinds of... meanwhile, there are these rich people having parties and things like that. He's got to deal with them as well. And just the obstinance of the church and other institutions. But, I didn't find out until after we saw the film that this is Vincent de Paul, you know. And you see outlets, trucks, things like that. The Vincent de Paul Society, where people donate. It's a big part of our culture.
Absolutely, yeah. His story is very famous and has a symbol and it become synonymous with charity work and so on.
Mm-hmm. So that was a 1947 French film depicting the life of Vincent de Paul from the 1600s. Not the kind of film that you just go out and see unless it was part of, I guess, an assignment, because we're seeing all these films, and it was. I'm glad we saw it. It was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And now the 1948 best film for the United States was Hamlet with Laurence Olivier. You know, to me, I saw that one coming down the pike, and I kind of had trepidation. I thought it was going to be a real snooze fest. Shakespeare, I couldn't see people in 1948 flocking to the theaters to see a Shakespeare play. Yet it won the best picture award for that year. It was very involved, but you know, the biggest criticism for this film was that it only ran 155 minutes. That they cut so much of it. Because, you know, Shakespeare, he was pretty long in the prose there. He had a lot to say.
Wordy?
Yeah. So they cut the whole Rosencrantz and Guildenstern thing, you know, the play within the play.
It was in there, but it was just very brief.
Yeah, they just sort of panned over it.
And then went right to the action in the audience.
But they didn't make the dialogue contemporary or anything like that. It was, you know, a lot of thee and thou and all, you know, those things that you're used to in the Shakespeare plays. I don't know, what do you think? Do you think it moved fast enough? Did it keep our interest?
It may have been a bit heavy, I think. With the dialogue is tough to get back into, but not unintelligible.
Mm-hmm.
But you really, with all of the film stuff that we're doing, it is important to pay very, very close attention, not only to the subtleties of production code, aesthetics, and cues, and those nuances, but also with something like this, you've got many words and a lot of old language and Shakespearean language that is a little difficult to interpret, especially over a really long, like, feature length format such as this. But I'm really impressed with the prints that we're watching, and it really looks beautiful. The black and white, the sets, it is quite a dramatic thing to experience. So it was, I think, captivating. It may a little slow, and of course, yeah, like, you know, commands your attention specifically because the language is hard, but not any more than any other of these historic films. It's just so important to just try to stay engaged because it's not as stimulating as what we're maybe used to in the modern sense.
I think the thing that maybe impressed me the most was simply the number of quotes that I was familiar with, that we were familiar with, that become a part of our lexicon, that come from this one work. Now, you don't need the film to tell you that, but film certainly, it basically, yes, Casablanca
is the same way, uh-huh. And some of these other movies more recently.
But come on, to be or not to be, come on, beat that.
Yeah.
Or this above all, to thine own self be true, to die, to sleep, perchance to dream. It just keeps coming on and on and on, all the hits. Give it a break, Shakespeare.
Remix. I mean,
yeah, just so much, and you're watching this thing. You don't know what's going on with kings and you know, all kinds of swords,
stabbing.
Yeah, all the treachery of all sorts. But then all the words, you I've heard this before.
Dramatic.
I said this to the gardener yesterday.
Yeah.
So yeah, Hamlet. It's definitely something that you might dread, but it's fun. And this is 1948 that this film came out. It was The screenplay was written by Laurence Olivier. It was directed by Laurence Olivier. It was also produced by Laurence Olivier, and it starred Laurence Olivier. If you don't like Laurence Olivier, you probably won't like this. So that's just a bit of a warning. Okay, we move on to 1949, the foreign film that won for that year, The Bicycle Thief, as it's called in this country, or Bicycle Thieves, as it's called in other countries. I think The Bicycle Thief is a better title because it doesn't give away an important plot line, which I don't want to give away now by saying that there's more than one bicycle thief in the film, and it's important who that turns out to be. But this is one of the most perfect films. It's just generally accepted that way. And when you think about how it was made, it was made without actors. It was made in kind of a documentary style with people from the street in Italy in 1949. People had no acting experience. And what you got as a result of that was this film that just was so honest. The reactions, the little kid who was, the son of the guy whose bicycle was stolen. He needs a bicycle to feed his family. Basically, little Bruno was this kid who just had these natural reactions to everything. In fact, this one scene where he's crossing a street and he almost gets hit by two different cars, that wasn't scripted. That almost happened. And they caught it on film, and his reaction just kind of averting this disaster was so natural, you could never script that in 100 years.
Yeah,
so many things like that.
You also can't get away with that anymore.
No, you can't.
If you're making a commercial production and you have a child running in traffic and there's no waivers, there's no insurance. Yeah.
You'd have agents, you'd have parents stepping up. Yeah, they didn't have those issues then.
Yeah, yeah. You would just probably be leaning really hard. You better be leaning hard on the student film or whatever you're calling it.
So that, if you have not seen Bicycle Thieves or The Bicycle Thief, by all means, go out, find that online, find that, you know, on a DVD, whatever you have to do. It is one of the most amazing films ever. It's just... It's not your typical film formula, because you'll get to the ending and you'll be like, that's how it ends? You know, you expect something. As Americans, you expect some kind of a formula to result in an ending that you expect. And with many foreign films, you don't get that. You get something completely different. And that's what life is. So... yeah, if you want to experience something that is real, and this is post-war Italy, too. This is happening, you know, in the streets there where people are recovering from that and life is hard. You can't get more real than that.
Yeah, really this can. Also was a theme or an aesthetic as we're in that period after the war for some of the next few films as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to 1949. Actually, this is the American. I was 1949 as well. This is the American winner for 1949. A film I knew nothing about, never heard of before, turned out to be extremely relevant, if uneven. All the King's Men, 1949 film. Basically, it was based on a novel, same name, and it's the story of a politician from his early days. As the underdog to somebody who becomes what's known as a populist. And as he becomes more and more successful, he becomes more and more ruthless. And he starts having these rallies where people are basically lined up behind him at all costs, willing to overlook anything that he does that is bad or evil, where violence basically comes out of these things, where there's all kinds of innocent victims. And you just see the guy change. You see people change around him, and you realize, oh, my God, we're living that right now. This is from 1949. How did they get this so right? It's interesting because I believe this guy's supposed to be a Democrat. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's Democrat or Republican. This kind of thing is pervasive in the political world. And to see it portrayed this way in 1949 was a real eye-opener.
I believe it was a demagogue.
Yeah, demagogue. That used to be a party.
Not a Democrat.
Whatever. But, yeah, you know, I had some problems with it, though, because of the way it was paced. The editing was just kind of, you know, it was weird. They're talking, and the scene fades too soon. It turns out what happened was this film was way too long, something like 3 hours long, and they had to cut it down to just over 90 minutes. And the way they did that was to take literally scenes and cut a couple of feet of film on each side of each scene, and then see what they got in the end. Look it up. That is really what happened.
You noticed that it changed the pace a lot. It was dramatic.
It was weird. I mean, yeah, you can't say it wasn't fast-paced, but it sort of didn't make sense sometimes. And I got to say the acting was kind of atrocious in many places. But the story, wow, the story was really interesting and eye-opening. And... I'm glad I saw this one because I didn't think people were aware of such threats at that time. There's a lot of ignorance that you realize about yourself when viewing previous periods. And when you see something where the dialogue is kind of clued in, you realize, hey, you know, people got it back then. They knew what was up.
Yeah, yeah. It's surprising. It really is to see the context and revisit it and with the perspective of... Of the present day and so on. It's mm-hmm. brilliant. It's really a hallmark of watching these and getting that historic view with a new perspective.
So. Now we move to the best films of 1950. Yes, we're in the 1950s now, and we've only done half. The American film is all about Eve. We have not seen that yet. But we did see the foreign film, The Walls of Malapaga, which is an Italian film but is in French. Yeah, because it's a French-Italian film, I guess. It's a co-production. And it's basically, it's a kind of a strange story about a French criminal on the run who finds himself in Genoa, Italy, falls in love with a woman, and he's on the run because he killed somebody in France, and
he keeps losing his belongings. He's kind of comically down and out. I won't give every detail, but he's a stowaway at one point. He's in a new port and then immediately becomes destitute, can't pay for a meal, can't pay for these things. Just kind of an allegory, I think, for travel in general. I think every traveler feels like that at some point during a trip.
Immediately gets ripped off by a guy who changes money with him because, he used to be able to change money between France and Italy. He had to do that every country in Europe.
The guy plays him hard.
He gives him fake bills and lifts his wallet so that when he finds himself having to pay for something, actually he has to get his tooth pulled. He winds up with a huge toothache in this town. He only has fake bills. And no other money because this guy lifted his wallet.
But the shopkeepers or restaurateurs actually end up taking pity on him to a degree.
Well, you see the compassion of humans, and you also see how people are taking care of each other in post-war Italy. And you see post-war Italy. You see people walking around in the streets. You see the ruins. And it's a real eye-opener. But again, you reach the end of this film, and it's kind of like, that's it? I was expecting some other resolution, but no, it just kind of like ends at a moment's notice.
Yeah, the abrupt endings are something a bit jarring. I think we're used to so much more conclusiveness and wrapping up. But it's
real. It's how life works. And this was a hard film to find. I couldn't find it anywhere. I actually had to track it down. I think some guy just burns it to DVD-Rs, and that's it. That's the only source for some reason. The captioning was awful, but you got a sense, and that's kind of what you have to put yourself through sometimes. Oh, we've come to the end of our film feature. Next week, it'll be a lot shorter because we won't be going through 3 years, hopefully. And I'm glad to see the projector is working again. Don't touch it this time, Kyle. All right. Blowing it. It's kind of hot. What else do we have? We almost went to war with Iran.
Was on the weekend. That was. Like,
yeah, I know,
little...
I know. Well, it was important. So, I don't even know where to begin with this. But basically, Iran shoots down a drone of the U.S., which they claim was over their land. Our country claims it was over international waters. But, regardless, it's pretty damn close to their land. What I always like to, to ask is how would we feel if things were reversed, if there was an Iranian drone in, quote-unquote, international waters just off the coast of New York? Wouldn't we be a little bit perturbed by that? I imagine we would, yet we expect to be able to just simply fly right next to them, if not over in their territory, and they can't do anything about it. I don't know. I'm kind of with Iran on this one. First of all, I'm ashamed to say this. I trust them more. I trust them more than our current government because our government is the one that broke the deal. They didn't. They did not break the deal. They stuck, and they're still sticking to the deal for some reason, and we broke our word. And we expect the rest of the world to just toe the line? No, that should not work that way. I'm very disappointed with the rest of the world for not challenging us more. Here's a headline I saw. France warns Iran against violating nuclear commitments. The nuclear commitments that we're no longer honoring, that we broke our deal, We didn't get warnings from France. We didn't get warnings from the rest of the world. No, we wound up imposing sanctions not only on Iran, but on any country that continued to buy oil from Iran. Now, where is the fairness in that? So all these countries now are scrambling to meet our new demands, which break the word of the deal that we signed. And never mind, it's a different president, still same country. So that kind of thing just should not be accepted. But no, Iran, they're the ones that are getting warned by France that a violation of its nuclear commitments would be a serious mistake, and that France, Britain, and Germany were making it clear to Tehran it was not in its interest to do so. Well, maybe Iran needs something positive to come its way.
So you think the Iran deal went far enough?
Yeah, I do.
That was it? That's all we needed?
Well, it was a good start.
So I think that's what the administration is trying to say. I mean, that's what I get out of it.
I don't think they're trying to say much. I think they're
I'm
just...
Not sa- they, they don't have a plan necessarily that's
they
that
have nothing.
Great other than making a lot of people mad.
But I mean, what do you think of Trump, though? He was about to bomb Iran, then apparently figured out that people were going to die if he did that, and pulled back. I'm glad he pulled back. I'm glad, you know, he actually said something that made sense. This is not worth it for an unmanned drone. And it's not. You know, he basically... They shot down a toaster in the air.
$180 million toaster.
Who cares
toaster?
How much it cost? I mean, don't throw it in the air if you don't expect something to happen to it. That's, you know, it's a military piece of hardware. Things
right,
happen all the time.
Right, but if the U.S. is not surveilling this area, then what?
Then we can do something
How do
else.
We know what's going on? How does the world know?
What's going on? What have we learned from this?
I don't know.
It's an intimidation tactic.
But we're the world's police, right?
No, so we're not. I mean, yeah, we are, but we shouldn't be.
Everyone in NATO or the UN or whatever is expecting us to have these assets in mm-hmm. the air. Mm-hmm. But I do agree. You're right. I mean, you go out in the world like this with hardware, stuff happens, and you run that risk. And if Iran's uncomfortable, they may act in a way that, you know, doesn't really make sense. But, I mean, I'm not surprised that the U.S. is trying to surveil their activities given the, you know, escalation or the implications of nuclear deals just
yeah.
generally.
And I don't trust for a second what our official representatives are saying about the facts. Because, look, we did this once before in a different country, and I don't doubt that we'll do it again. And with lunatics like John Bolton in charge, anything is possible. So, no, I'm not a big fan
right.
of the Revolutionary Guard, believe me, but let's not make the mistake of believing everything we're told.
Right, but are we okay? I don't care that much, but I will dispute. I mean, or let's just say, like, no one is disputing the ability of Iran to leverage weapons of mass destruction. That was a little more confusing with Iraq. This is a little more serious. Like in capability, like we know there are nuclear processing facilities in Iran,
they're not making nuclear weapons. They've agreed not to make nuclear weapons. All right, and we broke that agreement. So you know what? They can make nuclear weapons now.
I'm not saying it's warranted. I'm not saying they shouldn't be able to since the agreement dissolves. But it is, I think, wholly more real in a sense than the mysterious trailers in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
As far as you know. Having this conflict in the first place, in you know, loggerheads and diplomatic issues and tough talk in the way we are, it just seems like Iraq was more fabricated than what the world knows about Iran now.
Yeah, but the thing is, these are fabrications as well. We're fabricating
okay.
attacks on tankers that even the captains. Even the captains of the tankers are disputing. We're saying that our hardware was flying in international waters. They're saying otherwise. But, you know, there must be some neutral way of finding out who's telling the truth here. But regardless, we don't have a good track record. And we certainly don't have a good track record in that particular country.
No.
We put a leader that was not popular in charge. And apparently that's what Trump wants to do again with his Make Iran Great Again speech. I don't trust anything they say. And it's sad. It's sad that it's come to that. But actions speak. And I'm basing this on the actions. And when I trust Iran over my own country, as far as telling what's going on there, that's a sad statement right there. And I also trust Iran a lot more than I trust Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia apparently can't do any wrong, no matter what. Let's look at this with a lot of doubt because there's a lot of things to doubt.
I'm skeptical as well, and I agree that it is fishy the way it's portrayed in a lot of ways, in to a large extent. So I'm just pointing out that you know there's ample reason. I mean, and then I wouldn't want it to be a nuclear state that is a puppet of the U.S. any more than I would want Iran to escalate and be a nuclear power in the region, which would be better. We still would have nuclear weapons in the area. It's just, it does the U.S. have influence?
If the Shah of Iran was still in power, he'd be about 150, but still, we would have no trouble giving him nukes. I know that, and that's sick.
Right.
We don't have time to continue talking about this because we have a couple other things to get to before we sign off. Oregon, what the hell is going on in Oregon, Kyle? That's your neck of the woods.
Oh,
yeah.
Oregon.
Yeah, what
Oregon.
I mean, you have these lawmakers, these Republican lawmakers, Amy was just talking about that before our show, who fled the state rather than vote on a climate change bill. And the thing is, the climate plan, because of the wimpy Democrats, is now dead as a result of that. This is what the Republicans do. They play dirty, but they win constantly. They do things to make democratically elected governors powerless. They do all kinds of redrawing of districts, gerrymandering so that votes don't count anymore. They take advantage of the Electoral College, and they pull crap like this, where their representatives, Republican senators, literally flee the state so that there's no quorum, so that when they bring a bill up to the floor, there aren't enough people to vote on it or to establish a presence in the body, even if they have enough votes to pass the bill. So what they now have resulted in, they resulted in the bill dying as a result of those dirty tricks. And basically anyone threatening to bring them back is being threatened themselves with violence. This is what they get away with time and time again. And what I don't understand is, why can't the Democrats do something like make the period of time where these things are debated, if they're not going to be there, extend it. Change the rules then. If they're going to abuse the rules, you change the rules. Because Republicans have no trouble doing this. They do things like, not consider a candidate for a Supreme Court in an election year, and then when they're the ones in power, oh yeah, we'll consider it in an election year. They're hypocrites. They break the rules. Democrats let them, which makes them the biggest hypocrites of all. How do you answer that, Kyle? I mean, you're from there.
I don't know. You kind of just throw it at me like I have something to say to that. I don't know if I can help move the conversation any further. That's damning.
Yeah, and here's another story that pisses me off about Oregon. They killed a young bear because people fed him. Yeah, that happened too. A young black bear was shot and killed by state officials after becoming so habituated to humans. Habituated? Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Habituated to humans.
Yes.
That the public could get close enough to take selfies with him.
Ew.
Yeah. Tuesday evening hasn't happened there yet. Deputies from the sheriff's office and Oregon State Police were dispatched to the area after receiving two calls about the bear. Sent a tweet asking the public to stay away. Why'd they have to kill the bear? This young bear was being friendly. You know, put him in a zoo or something. But you don't have to kill somebody or kill a bear just because he's being friendly.
Yeah,
because people are idiots.
Sorry. Tranquilize and relocate the bear. What is so wrong with that? I mean, uh-huh. it just seems like they aren't consulting with wildlife specialists, and there are other ways of handling these kinds of things.
We have way too much to get through
in
a short period of time. But marijuana failed in the state of New York.
Nice.
Thanks again to Democrats. Thank you, hypocrites of the century. I want to name them. I want to name the people that were from Long Island. Six of them from Long Island.
Way to go.
Jim Gowkeran, freshman suburban lawmaker. I've been getting calls from the schools and the PTAs and law enforcement with concerns. They say they're already having enough problems with the flavored nicotine vaping, and this is the last thing they need. How about what the rest of us need? How about the tax money that we could all have benefited from? John Brooks. He was a registered Republican until 2017, and not anymore. He caucuses with the Democrats, and he's been at odds with his party. But basically, he told the Buffalo News that he'd heard safety concerns from law enforcement officials and parent groups, which convinced him we're not ready for the recreational use at all. and has really strong and legitimate opposition to it. You're not ready. The rest of us are ready. Trust us. We've done the research. The rest of the country is doing the research. Maybe pay attention. Stop worrying about the people who didn't vote for you. Anna Kaplan earned the seat for Nassau County's 7th District last year, defeating Republican Elaine Phillips after picking up endorsements from Governor Cuomo and Barack Obama. She offered support for marijuana legalization while she campaigned. Yeah, but now she's not ready to support it. Ultimately, it's important to look at the total picture and the full impact of legalization, and there are still too many public health and safety concerns at this time. Anna, look at what the rest of the country is doing. Look at the research. Look at the results from Washington, from Colorado, from California, and tell me that the research is not being done. All right, there are all kinds of studies happening. And just because you're afraid that Republicans are not going to like what you do, you were voted in by Democrats. Act like a damn Democrat, for God's sake. Monica Martinez, another first-term Long Island Democrat. She hasn't revealed much publicly about how she feels on marijuana legalization beyond the fact that she didn't support the bill. Her office didn't respond to inquiries from the Gothamist. The senator literally ran away from a WNYC reporter outside Senate chambers. And Todd Kaminsky, Long Islander, who most recently sponsored the state's ambitious climate change legislation, seemed as though he was gearing up to support legalization at the start of this year, but last we heard, the second-term senator, former federal prosecutor, was still uncertain, telling WNYC, "I certainly think having proper safeguards on the road are important. Is there a plan to have a breathalyzer for marijuana? How do you make sure kids don't get their hands on it? These are all important considerations." That's what we talk about during this whole process. That's what we've been talking about. And legalization is a great way to keep kids from getting their hands on it, because you don't have legalization, you're buying in street alleys and behind schools and things like that. That doesn't happen when it's legal. I'm so disappointed in these people.
Yeah, I hope people understand that there's a correlation between climate policy and things in the industrial and recreational cannabis community, like, you know, using this as a cover crop, using it in urban as well as agrarian settings. That there's a lot of versatility and benefit to this plant, and it is. I wish he saw it as related.
More importantly, though, you know, just stop being afraid. Stop being afraid so much of the people that don't support you in the first place.
Yeah, and things like driving. I mean, no one is saying smoke or consume cannabis and then get behind the wheel.
No.
That's never been the policy, and I think people need to the dosages and the testing, that's coming along through innovation, through the legalization efforts, but at the same time, you know, the short-term effects of these chemicals and your ability to operate a vehicle is no different than any other substance that you would caution someone about using, like a prescription medication or alcohol.
Well, one final word on all this. Again, Oregon just paid out $85 million in pot taxes to the school fund, to cops, to other services. That's something we can learn from them, and that's something we lost. Thank you, Democrats. Watch the debates. Ask questions. Good night. You carried my name.